evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, November 4th, 2019. IGAD says it will hold a meeting on the November deadline to form a unity government.
It's basically to deliberate on issues that have not been implemented and how best people could find a way forward.
And South Sudan's pre-transitional committee says it too will hold a meeting.
There is no date, but I understand that President Museveni already sent invitation to the parties. It sent the invitation to Dr. Machar. It sent invitation to our president. It sent invitation to Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Regional Bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, has scheduled a meeting this week to discuss the status of South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement. Signatories to the deal have welcomed the meeting and say they hope to talk about the challenges of fully implementing all terms of the deal by the November 12th deadline for forming a unity government. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Peter Mayen Majongdit, head of other opposition parties, or OPP, says all representatives of the parties that signed the peace deal were invited to the one-day Addis Ababa meeting to discuss the status of the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. Majongdit says, according to the invitation, the meeting is aimed at resolving the challenges hindering implementation of the peace deal and figuring out a way forward.
And therefore is basically to deliberate on issues that have not been implemented and how best people could find a way forward.
With less than a week to go before the November 12th deadline to form a unity government, it remains unclear how the parties will bridge the gap over differences on the number of states and their boundaries, as well as security arrangements. While President Salva Kiir's party and other opposition groups want the government formed by the November 12th, SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar wants the pre-transitional period extended by another 6 months to allow the parties time to resolve outstanding issues. The peace deal stipulates that these issues be resolved before the parties form a unity government. Majongdit says the lack of trust among parties and the lack of funding are two big problems.
The first 8 months, it took us very hard time for us to agree as opposition collectively to come and work in Juba. That took a lot of time, and even including Dr. Riek is not yet here in Juba.
Josephine Lagu, chairperson of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, confirms the South Sudan Opposition Alliance was invited to the IGAD meeting but declined to comment any further on the meeting. Stephen Kwole, the SPLM-IO Secretary for Foreign Affairs and Relations, says his group will attend the meeting.
Central to everything, of course, is the transitional security arrangement to pave the way for the formation of Articuno. Before you rush to formation of the government, you must have a security arrangement in place. The issue of the number of states and the boundaries is critical. You cannot form the Articuno without a fixed number of states. So it is structurally affect the formation of the government.
Kwole says the SPLM-IO will not accept the formation of a unity government until security arrangements are fully implemented and boundaries and states are decided as stipulated in the peace agreement. He says a failure to address the issue of the states affects the formation of government at the central and state level, including the reconstitution of the Council of States. Repeated calls to both Information Minister Michael Makwe and Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomro for reaction from the government on this story were unsuccessful. While Lomro did not answer our calls, Makwe said he was busy in a meeting and could not talk. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Guarantors of South Sudan's peace agreement are also expected to meet in the Ugandan town of Entebbe on a yet-to-be-scheduled date to discuss the status of the deal's implementation and forming a unity government. A member of the Pre-Transitional Committee, or NPTC, which is responsible for implementing pre-transitional activities, says the president of South Sudan and Uganda, the head of the Sudanese Sovereign Council, and rebel leader Riek Machar will attend the meeting. Michael Teat has more on the story from Khartoum.
NPTC member Theo Mathok, who accompanied NPTC chairman Tut Gatluak to Khartoum, says the committee delivered invitation letters to General Abdul Fattah al-Burhan, head of the Sudan Sovereign Council, and opposition leader Riek Machar to participate in the Ugandan meeting, but did not say when it would take place. Mathok told South Sudan in Focus that both al-Burhan and Machar have expressed their readiness to take part in the meeting whenever it is held.
There is no date, but I understand that President Museveni already sent invitation to the parties. It sent invitation to Dr. Machar. It sent invitation to our president. He sent invitation to Sudan. The chairman of the Supreme Council is going to be there. I'm not aware about the date exactly, but it has to be very soon because we are now approaching the 12th of November.
Pokboth Balwak, head of information for the SPLM-IO, confirms Machar received an invitation letter and SPLM-IO officials are awaiting a date.
We have received an invitation to attend the grantors meeting in Entebbe, but still we're still waiting for more information regarding the preparation for how this meeting will held or will take place in the Entebbe. We're still waiting for that from the grantors.
Mathok says his team met with Machar in Khartoum on Sunday and discussed with him the previous position of his party regarding the formation of the government next week. Mathok says he told Machar that he believes resolving the outstanding issues requires political will, not another extension of the deadline.
We cannot continue extending the period all the time. We must have to see into it that if there is going to be extension, then the tasks which are supposed to be implemented, they have to be implemented on time, and the government has to be formed.
2 weeks ago, Machar told the parties and the members of the UN Security Council in Juba that if disputes over the number of states are not resolved and security arrangements are not implemented fully, he would not be part of any government formed in November. Both says forming a government without resolving the outstanding issues is a clear violation to peace agreement itself. He called on other parties to allow for another extension so that all outstanding issues are resolved amicably.
What would happen in 2016, it was tragic and it caused a lot of lives of our vulnerable people, so we will not repeat it again. And this is an immoral and political obligations to us as an SPLM-IO toward our people in South Sudan.
Theo and Both say they believe the current political standoff in South Sudan might be disappointing to many South Sudanese, but they urge them to give political leaders more time to resolve the outstanding issues. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
A South Sudanese veteran politician says his country is not ready for multiple armies in a transitional period. Lama Cole, leader of the National Democratic Movement, says the opposition is calling for another extension for the formation of a unity government to avoid the country sliding back into war. Cole says having more than three armies in the country is not suitable for the formation of a new government next week.
The agreement is a package, and one of the most important issues was the recognition that the 2016 incident or violence happened because there were two armies. So from the very beginning of the talks in 2017, we had agreed that we should not get into the transitional period except with one army. How can you form a government when we are still having four to five armies? Is it that we are saying that we are going to repeat the 2016 or what?
What are the mediators telling you? I mean, you are part of the alliance of the opposition.
The mediators called for a meeting on the 18th of September to settle the issue of the states, because there are two issues. But the government boycotted that meeting, which means it didn't have the political will to resolve the issue. What the mediators are saying now is they want us to sit again. That's why they are calling for a meeting in Addis Ababa on the 8th of this month, so that the parties agree on the way forward.
This is happening at a time when the people of South Sudan had hoped that a unity government will be formed by November 12th. Now you're going to Addis on the 8th, and you're going there with divided opinions. The government wants to move ahead with the formation of the unity government. You are telling me that forming a unity government under four armies is a recipe for disaster. So is there hope that you're going to agree on the 8th of November on one concrete roadmap?
Well, definitely we will do that. We are hoping that we will agree. That was the same thing in May. You know, in May, we went on the 3rd of May, which was only 9 days before the deadline. We discussed and we agreed. And by then also, the same opinions were there. The government was insisting on formation of the government, and others were saying, no, the government cannot be formed because we have not done what was supposed to be done. So at the end of the day, our reference is the disagreement, and we will refer to the relevant article, and we see who is right, you know, and what is the right thing to be done. So I don't think it is a big problem that cannot be solved by dialogue.
But by extending the deadline is, in a way, extending the suffering of the people.
I don't think so. No, this is the simplistic way. This is what happened in 2015, 2016. They say that, oh, you must form the transitional government. You remember, even Riyad was pressured to get to Juba because everybody thought that the formation of the transitional government at that time was going to solve all problems, you see. But it didn't work. In 2 months, the fighting broke out again. The people of South Sudan this time want a peace that will be sustainable. And the peace will only be sustainable if you have a national army that represents all tribes of South Sudan. And this is what we are trying to ensure by making sure that the unified, the national, the necessary unified force is formed, trained, and deployed before the transitional government is formed. Our people in South Sudan understand that. Because, you know, the security is not about the VIPs. So these VIPs, they are now in Cuba, they dine and wine with government representatives. There is no problem. There is no much problem really regarding them. Even when people fought in 2016, how many VIPs died? When people were killed in 2013, how many VIPs died? It was the normal person who was the victim of this in the hands of the army which was supposed to be theirs. So this time we want an army which will enjoy the confidence of the common man.
The people that you are saying understand the situation are asking, is there anything that will unite the political leaders in South Sudan?
Well, why they are asking is that because the government has made pledges that it will pay the money, and it did not pay the money. So that is the question. Why is it that the government doesn't want to get this thing done with once and for all? So that is why they are asking. They are seeing the lack of political will on the side of the government.
But some are also blaming you, the opposition, that you keep changing goalposts and bringing more demands every day.
What did we change? We didn't change anything. Tell me a single thing that we have changed.
You all agreed that you wanted 6 more months. And after the six more months, you are now asking for another six more months.
No. 6 months were not an end in itself. We're asking for 6 months in order to ensure that the necessary unified force is trained, deployed in South Sudan. This is why we ask for 6 months.
That's Lama Cole, leader of the National Democratic Movement. He was speaking via WhatsApp with my colleague John Tanza from Khartoum earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A South Sudanese diaspora in Australia says President Kiir has all he needs to resolve issues and form a unity government. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you think is the most important human right?
To me, the most important human right is for everyone to be given a fair trial, that is, those that are in court, so that they don't get punished for something they did not commit.
The most important human right is the right to live, because God is the maker of human being. So he has given you that opportunity. So you should have the freedom to move anywhere you want to. There's no restriction.
The freedom of speech that I think is, when I have something which is burning within me, I have the right to tell you, this thing you are doing is wrong. When it's right, I will tell you the thing is right. And when you stop me from saying that, everything will get worse because you have neglected my right.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A former South Sudanese politician who resettled in Australia says South Sudanese leaders have another chance to put their country on the right path. Jacque Marek says President Kiir has all it takes to end the stalemate over the formation of a transitional government of national unity. Marek says President Kiir's legacy is at stake if South Sudan continues to experience conflict.
Soon as we got the independent 11, we as the political leaders, or South Sudanese political leaders, never sit down and find out what is it that will unite us now. Because I don't believe that power can unite people. Power is what you take to service the unity, to service the object that unites you. For example, let's say we need economic prosperity for our people. Okay, I need to buy as Jirkwe, contest for power, to get that power to service that. In the absence of something that is transcending the power, it will be very difficult for leaders to agree. Because the agreement will come down to what should I have and what should the other one have. And since we have no trust in what unites other South Sudanese, everybody runs with their own tribal cocoon. And it will be very hard for us to come together. And I think that's my conclusion of why leaders don't come to agreement. They look at agreement as a power sharing.
In this situation where the leaders are looking at any sort of an agreement as sharing power, what should be done so that these leaders can have one vision for South Sudan and end the political wrangle over who should be the vice president, who should be the president?
To be honest, my only hope is President Salva Kiir. The reason I say President Salva Kiir is President Salva Kiir has got a legacy that he needs to leave. He started these things when he was young, and I don't think he would want it to end the way it is now. I hope that one day people around him, or him coming out, and by saying him, I don't mean other people have not contributed in making this stuff. I say him because he's now the leader. The rest are rebels. You don't trust the unity of the country on a rebel. You trust the unity of the country on those who, on that one who is in power. My only hope is if Salva Kiir could come to his senses and he see that whatever is being done by the rebels, whatever advice are being given to him by those around him, are actually not leading him to the legacy that he would want to have.
But supporters of President Kiir will tell you that President Kiir has made so many compromises. I mean, he has accepted to have 5 vice presidents. They will give you a list of the things that he has compromised on. How would you react to them?
I'm sorry, my reaction to that is that it still brings back to what looking at the unity as power. I don't see them saying, okay, President Kiir wanted to leave a country that has got a very clear spell out social system, a very clear spell out economic system, a very clear spell out political system. They don't say that. To me, these are the things that I see Salva Kiir need to do, not power sharing. Power sharing is not important to Salva Kiir legacy. What is important to Salva Kiir legacy is a kind of civilization you will leave politically, economically, and socially. So whatever they mentioned falls back into what I said before. is power sharing, and people cannot be united by power sharing. I'm actually against those four, five vice presidents, but it's still a part of power sharing. So I don't look at it as a legacy. Rating five vice presidents, not legacy. So, and the people that give you this kind of example are people that are actually, in one way or another, trying to destroy the legacy of self-appeal.
Jerkwe, let me give you this scenario. If today you are leading South Sudan, you are the leader of a country called South Sudan, and you are surrounded by politicians who have big appetite for power, how would you maneuver you that environment?
It all depends. It all depends on to what extent do they have your ears, or to what extent do you listen to them. To be honest, I agree with you. Having read Machiavelli, The Prince, the people around you can be an obstacle, at the same time can be people that help. So it depends.
That's Jurke Mareg, a former South Sudanese politician who has resettled in Australia, speaking via WhatsApp with my colleague John Tanza in Melbourne. Jubek state officials are asking hundreds of people living illegally at a Juba cemetery to vacate the property. A Jubek state minister says the people occupying the cemetery should return to their home villages. But some of the people living at the cemetery want the government to allocate them land elsewhere because they say their villages are insecure. Ding Magot has more for VOA from Juba.
Hundreds of families now call the Haimalakal Cemetery home in Juba. The cemetery, measuring about 300 by 300 meters, is located a few meters away from the Palatial Pyramid Hotel and the Bedouin Hotel. On the cemetery's grounds, hundreds of shacks covered with plastic sheeting or bags sit side by side with gravestones. The cemetery dwellers come from all over South Sudan. 26-year-old John Loani, whose parents are from Terekeka State, says he was born in the cemetery. Loani says his father was a soldier, and when he died, his mother remained at the cemetery. Loani, who is now a senior four student at British High School in Juba, says he and his family live on the cemetery grounds because they have no other place to go.
As a Mondari, if the person passed away, is buried in middle of house, and we look that person as a brother. Now, we are saying here, No places in Juba here, because places have parents there, but here in cemetery is the empty place, and we not have a place.
Loani says his family and other families living in the cemetery are unable to return to their home villages because those areas are either insecure or lack infrastructure like schools. Speaking in Arabic, 43-year-old Wani Kulang says he has lived in the cemetery with his wife and eight children since January 2011 when South Sudanese voted for independence in a referendum.
My children have stayed here in the cemetery, including my daughter who was born here at the cemetery, and she is in the university now. The government grabbed our land, which forced us to come here. Life is difficult. We only get food when all women go to marketplaces to do temporary work, like sorting grains.
The Jubek State Minister for Physical Infrastructure, Francis Swaka, says the government plans to redevelop the land where the cemetery sits, so everyone living there illegally should vacate the area.
Then they move out and look for themselves a place, to within them, because, they cannot continue living there. Because, they live in there, they produce kids, and of course, these kids, who knows, maybe one day will be a president, maybe one day will be a minister like me, will be a commissioner, will be an MP, will be an engineer. So, we need to value them. So I'm just requesting, our citizens, if you have your relative live there, please try to talk to them.
Juba's Deputy Mayor for Physical Infrastructure, Thik Mayadit, advises people living in the cemetery to ask Jubek state officials to allocate them alternative plots of land.
The land does not belong to them. So those people which are living there, they were not living there. They should not lie. That is a cemetery for the people to be buried. You are not supposed to live there.
Rech Malwal, a lawyer and chairperson of the Coalition of Public Interest, notes that many people in Juba are homeless, but they must acquire land using lawful means.
People in Juba and other areas find it very difficult to find just a small piece of land to call home. It's very hard. And this is why you have seen there is a lot of land grabbing. And this is why you have seen there are people only settling in the graveyards, because that is the only place that they can get.
Malual is appealing to the government to allot free plots of land to South Sudanese who need a place to live. Loani, Kulang, and other South Sudanese living in the High Malakal Cemetery say they will vacate the cemetery land if the government gives them plots of land to settle on. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Police in Uganda's capital fired tear gas at a group of journalists today, ironically as the media members protested against alleged police brutality. Halima Othumani reports from Kampala.
A group of about 50 journalists had gathered at Kampala City Center to march to police headquarters and deliver a petition to the chief of police. The petition asks authorities to investigate and reprimand officers who were found guilty of assaulting journalists and to stop police brutality in the field. Last week, police allegedly assaulted four journalists who went to cover a strike at Makerere University over a 15% tuition increase. On Monday, police quickly dispersed the journalists' protest and briefly detained some of them. Alex Esagala, a photojournalist with the Daily Monitor newspaper, describes the scene.
As we were covering that protest, one of the commander came and told me that today it is between life and death. And therefore, they started tear gassing us. The good thing, I was putting on a bulletproof, so it fell down. Then it exploded under my legs. I got severe injuries.
A few journalists were eventually allowed into the police headquarters to deliver the petition. Isaac Semakade is a lawyer who was among those tear gassed and bundled into a police pickup truck. Semakade, who represents many journalists in court, says his non-profit legal aid services is struggling to keep up with police and government actions against the media.
We are overwhelmed with the requests for rapid response, requests to unseal closed media houses. We are overwhelmed with requests to recover stolen and broken cameras and other media equipment. Something has to be done as we enter the general election cycle. Journalists all over Uganda are under threat. Let this threat not be minimized or normalized.
Onyango Patrick, a Kampala Metropolitan Police spokesperson, told VOA that the petition was received and would be delivered to the chief. Patrick says police and journalists need to respect each other.
We both need to understand each other's role. As a journalist, what am I supposed to do? As a police officer, what am I supposed to do in times of riots? So we both need each other, and we are both not wrong, and we are both not correct.
The Uganda Journalists Association leadership says reporters will not cover police functions until they hear from the police inspector general. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Yesu Motomoto by Barakole Taduda. Listening to Barakole Taduda with the song Yesu Motomoto. I'm Ayen Dengbior in Washington. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.